Well, of course, we have a new Senate tax bill that has been passed. It was passed about 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning by a margin of 51 to 49. And as a result, it now moves on to reconciliation with the House cut, the House tax cut plan. And there are some differences here. These differences will be ironed out for sure. Whether this will reach final passage remains to be seen. It appears it's headed that way. But reconciliation is the next step. And there are some differences and a lot of similarities. As far as similarities, right now, both the House bill and the Senate bill would cut the corporate top tax rate to 20%. There's one difference, though. The House bill would make the corporate tax cut effective on January 1, 2018, less than a month away. However, as it's currently formulated, the Senate cut would take the rate to 20% in January of 2019. So there's a one-year difference between the House and the Senate version as they head to reconciliation. As far as the repatriation rate, there are some differences there, but as applied to liquid assets, things like cash and short-term holdings, it looks like it would be a range of 10 to 14%. Now, we've seen a number of 12% proposed. The range seems to be between 10 and 14. This will head to reconciliation, but it's a narrow range, 10 to 14% with a midpoint of 12%. As they decide how to work it out. There's also the state and local tax deduction change, which is very dramatic. And in both cases, the deduction for state and local taxes, such as income taxes, sales taxes, and property taxes, has been changed. The elimination of deductibility of state and local income taxes and sales taxes is agreed in both versions, the House and the Senate. And now, in both versions, up to $10,000 in property taxes can be deducted. That's where it stands right now as they head to reconciliation. Mortgage interest deduction changes are also different. In the case of the House bill, and this only applies to new mortgages. If you have a mortgage right now, it does not affect you. It only applies to new mortgage loans. In the House bill, you will be allowed to deduct on a new mortgage for a primary residence only up to $500,000. Anything above that, you don't get a deduction under the House bill. In the Senate version, you will be allowed to deduct on new mortgages for a primary residence and one other residence up to a total of $1 million. So there's a big difference between the two, although it doesn't affect that many people because most people do not have giant mortgages like that. Estate tax changes are dramatic. In both cases, the House and the Senate, you will get an individual estate tax exemption of $11.2 million. That's $22.4 million for a married couple. Now, in the case of the House version, the estate tax would be repealed completely in 2024. There would be no further estate tax after 2024 in the House version. In the Senate version, it would remain at $11.2 million, which is $22.4 million for a married couple estate. That would remove the vast majority of estates from taxability. Now, those are the major chords that will be reconciled between the House and the Senate going forward, starting this week. But there is another item which affects individual investors only, which is causing a lot of pushback. And that is the mandatory requirement that you use a first-in, first-out accounting when selling stock. So that if you choose to sell stock that you hold in a company, you will be forced by federal law to sell the first shares you owned, the oldest shares you own, which in many cases would be the lowest priced shares that you own. Therefore, this will maximize capital gains revenue for the federal government because you will no longer have the ability that you currently have to specifically identify the shares that you sell. So once you lose the ability to have specific identification on the shares that you sell, that means the federal government is then telling you, you must sell the oldest shares. Now, of course, what is going to happen as a result of this is individual investors are going to open multiple brokerage accounts so that they can still choose which shares to sell. And the reason they will do this is because the federal government cannot tell you which brokerage house to go to sell your shares. And so if you have multiple brokerage accounts and you have shares spread all over the place, it'll be up to you to decide which broker you're going to go to do a transaction. But that's going forward into the future. That will have no effect on the past. On the past, on the date that this particular bill is finally adopted and signed into law, at that point, the FIFO requirement will go in for individuals only, not for mutual funds. And that will mean you must sell your oldest shares first in any holdings you have on the date that the bill is signed into law and use the FIFO first-in, first-out rule on that particular item. Let's get Chris on the line in San Ramon. Chris, it's your turn.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you. My question basically is whether it's wise for me to use a money manager. I'll tell you my situation. I'm retired. I have about $2.5 million for investing, and currently I have a lot of that in Portfolio 3, but I'm a little bit uneasy about putting all of my money into that portfolio, and it's just I don't know why exactly. I think it's an emotional thing, putting so much into seven money mutual funds. So I recently met with a financial advisor, and she gave me a couple of points, and I was just wondering if you would comment on them. She, of course, thinks I should use a manager. And one of the reasons was she said anyone with over $500,000 should be in individual stocks as opposed to mutual funds because of the fees involved, the risk of over-diversifying, and the inability to harvest losses, and maximize gains. And I was just wondering if you had a comment on that. Of course, there's also the fees that they're going to charge, which I think are a little high at 1.25 up to $1 million. But beside from that, do you have any comment on the other reasoning that she used?
Well, yeah, I think it's unadulterated nonsense. Let's take them point by point. What's the first point you'd like me to comment on?
Well, the fees. For mutual funds.
Well, it's going $1 million at 1.25%. That's $12,500. What are you getting for $12,500? What are you getting?
Well, I guess the ability to move the money around faster.
Whoa! I don't even know what that means. If you have a portfolio, for example, of index funds, you can, as a general rule, you can call up the fund family and move money at will. On the telephone, or even better, doing it online. Many people do it online. So I don't even know what that means, moving money around faster. That has no meaning.
She particularly pointed out that it takes a day to, you know, you get the price at the end of the day when you sell a mutual fund as opposed to the immediate
time. Are they suggesting, this is incredible, are they suggesting to you that you would receive a benefit because they would be able to day trade as opposed to trading at the close of the market on a given day? Is that the implication, that they would be day trading within the day and you wouldn't have to wait till the end of the day? Because if that's what they're saying, then that makes no sense at all to me.
Well, that was one of their points. I think they were sort of pointing out, you know, if the market is, if we're predicting a drop in the market, we could get out more quickly. I think that was.
Do they have a history of having successfully called drops in the market of that sort?
She claims that they do, yes. Yes.
No, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, because this is really important, do they have a history of having removed their clients' money from the market prior to a major drop in the market and then reentering after the drop has been complete or near complete? Do they have a history of that that's been proved to you, documented?
And how would that be proven? I do think she has.
Oh, there's a good question. There's a good question. Well, look, obviously, obviously, Chris, this person is a salesperson.
Right.
And wants to open the account so that the fees can be accrued to the company. I understand all that. But I need a reason to do it.
What about the issue of harvesting losses and to maximizing gains? Is that a legitimate point?
Not right now. The market's at all-time highs. So as I said to an earlier caller this hour, it's very hard to find losses right now.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything from this presentation that would suggest to me that I should shell out $12,500 when I have a situation where I have a portfolio that is predominantly invested in index funds, a portfolio that has performed very, very well. You haven't given me a single reason.
The over-diversification is not a...
I don't even know what that means. What the heck does that mean? If I own the total stock market index, then, which you do, by the way, in Model 3, then that means I essentially own the length and breadth of the companies across America. I don't even know what, I mean, to me, that sounds like something for the uninitiated, over-diversification. If I have the total stock market index, am I well-diversified? Of course, I'm very well-diversified. Am I over-diversified? What the heck does that mean? That doesn't have any meaning to me. Look, you can tell this salesperson that you talked with me, and I wish her very, very good luck, but I do not recommend what she's telling you for you. And I appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us, Chris. Bob Brinker here. More to come. Stay with us.